From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this program we call Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, forbidden archaeologist Michael Cremo joins us. Stories of high strangeness. Well, here's more rhetoric from North Korea. Now they are cutting its last channel of communications with the South because they say war could break out at any moment. It also said they're doing all this after warning the United States and South Korea of nuclear attacks. The move is the latest in a series of threats from North Korea in response to new UN sanctions imposed after its third nuclear test in February and military drills with the United States and South Korea. Jerry Corsi, who's been monitoring this situation for us. Jerry, you know what? I don't know. My gut tells me something's going to happen.
Well, George, if North Korea continues to be belligerent and threatening everybody you can think of, I mean, now South Korea and the United States, it's a very dangerous situation. I'd like to be able to dismiss North Korea as a belligerent state that's just really out to extort China and the United States to give more benefits. But, you know, when these kind of threats occur, you can't just dismiss them. The threats that you ignore are the threats that end up being the most dangerous.
Well, there's no doubt. Charles R. Smith was on our program yesterday, Jerry. He thinks it's North Korean rhetoric, that they just want to basically extort us for more and more money. I got to tell you, that's not a good way to do it.
Well, that's certainly the pattern of the previous regime, and the son has learned from the father. But, you know, George, if this is the pattern of foreign policy of North Korea, and they're starting out this way, it's not a very good pattern, and it only can escalate. Otherwise, North Korea is going to look ridiculous to the world. The pattern will have no impact whatsoever. So this kind of increased rhetoric could easily be followed by some action, and a war could develop.
They're kind of making the Iranian situation go away for a while, aren't they?
Well, I'll tell you, George, between what's going on in the Middle East and Korea and other spots of the world, I mean, it's happening with the EU and Cyprus. It's a very dangerous time right now. And I certainly would not rule out the seriousness of what North Korea is up to.
I agree. Jerry, thanks so much. Hey, depending on their genes, some Parkinson's patients may be able to slow their illness by taking vitamin D supplements, according to a study from Japan. Researchers randomly assigned 114 people with Parkinson's disease to take either vitamin D or a placebo every day for a year and found that the neurologic condition didn't progress as much in those who took the supplements compared to those who took the placebos. But that was only true for people with certain versions of a gene for the vitamin D receptor. Wells Fargo, the bank, said that customers had experienced problems early in the day using their debit cards, but that the technical glitch had prevented use of the cards has been fixed. Customers reported on Twitter that their debit cards were being rejected for purchases. The number four U.S. bank by assets worked with the card processor Visa to resolve the issue. Wells Fargo's debit card problems not connected to its website problems that they had yesterday. And internet users around the globe were facing slowed down service thanks to what's being called the biggest cyber attack in history. The prolonged denial of service assault is targeting SpamHaus Project, which is a European spam fighting group that has gone after Cyberbunker, a data storage company that offers to host any content except child porn and anything related to terrorism. The organization has been in a long-running feud with Cyberbunker and claims that spammers use it as a host from which to spray junk mail all across the web. Internet security firm Cloudflare says SpamHaus contacted it last week, saying that it had been hit with an attack big enough to knock its site offline. Lauren Weinstein, I'm going to give you an office here, Lauren. You're on every day. How are you?
Yeah, well, I wish there weren't so many of these kinds of incidents.
I know it.
To invoke this.
Now, what is this story?
All right. What you've got here is Cyberbunker is a they're kind of interesting. They literally operate out of an old nuclear military nuclear war bunker, underground bunker, and that's in the Netherlands. And SpamHaus is based in Geneva and London. Both of these were formed in 1998, so they've both been around for a while. as you said, Cyber Bunker basically promotes themselves as a place to store almost anything. So you can assume there's a fair bit of illicit material there, either from a copyright standpoint or whatever. Spam House puts out block lists that a lot of sites around the internet use to decide, well, this is a bad site, this is a good site, to decide who they should accept email from. Obviously, Cyber Bunker has some PR problems. Spam House also has some PR problems, mm-hmm. because a lot of times the things they put on their lists include sites that are innocent. And if you're an innocent site that gets on a Spam House list, it can be pretty difficult to get off as a practical matter. So, you know, you have a very complicated kind of situation here. In this particular case, what you've got is that the violating party is clearly Cyber Bunker. They got upset when Spam House put them on Spam House's block list, and then apparently Cyber Bunker at that point, we assume, we can't prove this, launched a distributed denial of service attack on Spam House, which was done in such a way, it used apparently botnets, attacked the DNS, had a lot of forged IP, source addresses, all these kinds of things that attack fundamental internet infrastructure weaknesses that we know about, but that have been kind of prolonged to deal with and to fix. And they did it in such a way that it caused a lot of collateral damage, and there's been a lot of places. So in other words, not just Spam House was affected, as you said. It was such a big attack that it caused problems elsewhere. Now, that being said, a lot of people didn't see anything at all. I haven't noticed anything. I did a little poll earlier today, and I only could find a couple of people who had seen, you know, anything that they could attribute to this. But that doesn't mean that in some parts of the world and for some services, mm-hmm. there couldn't have been a dramatic impact.
But that also tells you about the vulnerability of the internet, doesn't it?
Yes. There are structural vulnerabilities in the internet. We know what they are. A lot of them have to do with the fact that the fundamental design has been geared up so much from what it was 30 years ago, let's say. And we know how to fix these things, but it's very expensive to do and logistically difficult to do because you're dealing with so many different systems controlled by so many different entities with so many versions of software. It just goes on and on. So the concern is that if we don't find a way to deal with some of these known vulnerabilities, these kinds of attacks are going to get larger and larger. And this was, if not the largest, one of the largest that we've seen. So we have to get on the ball to deal with this, but it's not something you could just throw money at. It really takes a very concerted effort.
Let me say, I'll probably end up talking to you tomorrow.
Oh, I hope not on this. I hope not on this one. And the attack apparently has largely or completely subsided now, this particular one.
All right, Lauren, thank you so much. Listen to this story. The FBI says it never followed up on its most popular file in its online reading room, a one-page UFO memo that passes along a second or third-hand report about flying saucers and alien passengers that were supposedly recovered in New Mexico. The memo's dated March 22nd of 1950. It's been viewed almost a million times over the past couple years, the FBI said this week in a blog posting. It was written by Guy Huttle, who was the head of the FBI's field office in Washington at the time, and addressed to FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover. In the memo, Huttle describes an account provided to an FBI agent that was attributed to an informant who heard it from an Air Force investigator that three so-called flying saucers had been recovered in New Mexico. This is what it says. They were described as being circular in shape with raised centers approximately 50 feet in diameter. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape but only 3 feet tall, dressed in metallic cloth of a very fine texture. Each body was bandaged in a manner similar to the blackout suits used by speed flyers and test pilots. Now, Huttle, he was told that the saucer's control systems might have been disrupted by interference from a very high-powered radar setup that the government had in the area. But he admitted in the memo that no further evaluation was attempted by the informant, whose name is blacked out in the online document. What an incredible story. And you know, we get lots of emails, hundreds and hundreds every hour. I want to share one with you from Police Officer Tom in North Dakota. So, George, my name is Tom. I'm a police officer with 19 years at my department. When I worked the midnight shift, I caught coast to coast whenever I could. You helped the night go by. On January 16th of 2011, I was on patrol on a midnight shift when I was hit by a drunk driver I broke my back. I have been on light duty since. It's been a rough 2 years and a lot of pain. On Feb 13th of this year, I had back surgery. I had rods put in and a fusion on my L4, L5, S1 level. So I've been home since Feb 13th. Coast to Coast has always been there when I was up during the night because I could not sleep due to my back pain. Well, after a rough 2 years and my wife and daughter helping me, I had my six-week checkup yesterday and things are looking really good. I have nerve damage to my right leg and foot. They're numb, they're tingly. But that's okay. It's better than before the operation. I will be able to go back to light duty behind a desk next week. I just wanted to thank you and Coast to Coast AM for being there. During the tough times that I had the past 2 years, you don't know what a help Coast to Coast has been. That's from Officer Tom in North Dakota. Tom, you are welcome. Get better. Well, it seems that winter is gone, even though we're into spring. Finally, I think things are slowing down. The Midwest got walloped with a lot of snow and the East, too. But I think springtime is really going to start popping up now. And C. Crane would like to remind you that they've got the travel radio for you ready to go, the SW Pocket. It's small. It's an AM and FM shortwave portable radio. It gets great reception for its size. It uses two AA batteries that can last up to 70 hours, comes with a nice travel case, gets great audio and reception too, and has been rated as one of the best travel size radios you can get. C. Crane continues to offer a deal that you will never believe. For just $49.95, you'll also receive the pocket radio, an AC adapter, and they'll toss in a couple AA batteries. Indulge yourself and order the SW Pocket with the AC adapter and the two batteries for only $49.95 tonight by calling C. Crane at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863, or go online at ccrane.com. And welcome back to Coast. We've got a real treat for you this hour. Brendan Cook with us, the Ghost Investigator Society. He has brought with him a couple EVPs. We're going to let you listen to several of them tonight. He, of course, has been a member of the not-for-profit group, the Ghost Investors Society, for a long, long time. The investigators have been on Coast to Coast, geez, for a number of years. They conduct investigations and instruct and assist, as well as educate anyone who believes that they may be experiencing ghostly phenomenon. Here's Brendan Cook back. Brendan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What are you up to now? Five members in the GIS?
Actually, you know, originally it was five, and within the last few years, we've actually added three.
Good for you.
So, yeah, we're up to eight now.
Well, and I like the fact that, you know, everybody's equal in the organization, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the things we've really kind of always based our group on, is there's no leader, there's no organizer, any of that stuff. It's just all of us have the equal interest in ghosts, so we all kind of share the equal amount of power, if you will.
When you went out initially, in the beginning, I mean, when you were with Art, I mean, years ago, how did that all start?
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's going way back.
It is. In fact, I think the first show we did on Coast to Coast was 99.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're talking years. The way I actually got into researching ghosts was I was a skeptic. And I still, even though I've had all the experiences I have, I still pretty much am. Basically, my wife actually started saying, you know, hey, I want to go out and do this. And, you know, I heard that if you get a tape recorder, you can go out to a cemetery and record voices and that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, I don't think that's going to work. But if you're going to go, I have to go with you because I'm not having you out in the middle of the night in the cemetery. And I went with her, and, you know, first two, three times, nothing happened. It was a couple of crazy people in the cemetery in the middle of the night. And then all of a sudden, I think it was our fourth or fifth time going out, there was no mistaking that she actually recorded a voice. And it was the voice of, I mean, what sounded like a child. And
you were using tape recorders in those days, right?
Oh, yeah. These were the old analog mini cassette recorders. Yeah, that's exactly what we were using.
Yeah.
And, you know, she picked up this voice, and it was this child that sounded maybe like he was, I would guess, six or seven. And again, this is 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. There should be no children.
No. Not
so, I mean, you know, you're kind of at that point left to wonder, you know, are you picking up radio waves? Are you picking up, like, well, at that time, it wasn't even really cell phone transmissions. You know, is it CB radio that maybe you're picking up? Baby monitors been suggested.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And that's a good explanation until you start getting either this kind of contemporary information or even responses to, you know, what you're asking. Or not, maybe not even what you're asking, but what you're actually doing, you know, just between each other.
Because it almost sounds like a conversation between you and the ghost. And,
right.
Of course, in many cases, you can't hear it until you go back and listen to the audio or the tape. But, you know, if it were a transmission of some type or you were picking up a little baby monitor, it surely wouldn't be in rhythm with your questioning.
Exactly. I mean, you know, there is some amount of chance that could happen. But as many times as it has happened with us, it's, and again, like I said, I'm still, after doing it this long, kind of skeptical. I always try and figure out what could cause it. But it's just so hard when it actually interacts with you or gives some kind of contemporary information.
Are you tipping toward believing that this is all real?
Well, I believe there's something out there. I mean, I definitely believe that, but is that a ghost or is it, you know, I guess another dimension or, you know, who knows? And honestly, I don't think we will know. I mean, in our lifetime, certainly. And I almost wonder if us as humans even have the capability of understanding what the other side really is.
Brendan Cook, of course, brought with him three EVP sounds. We're going to play one for you now, and then we're going to play two after the break. Now, this first one, Brendan, we're going to play it and then have you describe where you were and what it was. Then we'll play it again for people. It's always nice for them to listen to it several times. I listened to it. Sounds like an EVP sound of a woman. Here it is.
Put that thing in his eyes. Put that thing in his eyes.
Okay, we're going to play that for you again, but let me talk with you about this, Brendan. Where were you, and what do you think that is? I heard something about put that in his eyes or something like that.
Right. This was recorded in the Egyptian Theater in Ogden, Utah, and it's a location we've investigated, I would say, 40 times, if more. And this was actually recorded, I think, 2 years ago. And what I had done is I had actually left a recorder underneath the stage area, which is where the people who work there say the most haunting happens. So I left it there for probably 5 hours. And, you know, we went around to the rest of the building. I mean, it's a huge building. Came back 5 hours later to pick it up. And there was literally nothing on this recorder up until this woman says what sounds like put that thing in his eyes.
Let's hear it again.
Put that thing in his eyes. Put that thing in his eyes. Put that thing in his eyes.
That's got to be one of the clearest EVP sounds I've ever heard, Brenda. I mean, clearly you can hear him say, put that thing in his eyes.
Yeah, oh yeah. And here's the thing. It sounds like the woman has almost an accent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can get that when you're listening to it, but it sounds like maybe a South American type of accent. It's just kind of what I pick up when I hear it. And actually, I thought this was different because we actually have two voices that say, put that thing in his eyes and put this in his eyes. So I was confused on which voice this was. This voice was actually recorded in the Exchange Building in Ogden.
Now, who goes back and listens to the 5 or 6 or 7 hours of generally dead audio until you can hear a voice pop up?
All the members. It's kind of one of those labors of love, I guess. It's easily not the most fun part of what we
do. That's got to be tough.
Yeah.
Listening to silence, that. You know, hoping that you've got something, and then it just pops up all of a sudden.
Well, and what's worse is when you listen to the 5 or 6 hours and you get nothing. I mean, and that happens, I would say, 80% of the time. There's absolutely nothing there.
Do you generally get the EVPs in haunted places or places that you know people have died? Or is it very random?
It actually seems to be kind of random. But again, that's taking into account who knows what happened in that location hundreds of years ago, even. But, I mean, we've had EVPs in supermarkets where, you know, just as kind of a test, we'd go in there in the middle of the night. We knew nobody was around. We actually talked to the employees to say, hey, we're doing this little test to see, you know, there's no reports of hauntings, anything like that. Can we just record and see if anything happens? And yet we've still recorded things.
Brendan Cook's group, the Ghost Investigator Society, they do not participate in satanic rituals or evil witchcraft or anything like that. You guys and gals are pretty straight investigators, Brendan.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, we've had people ask, you know, do you use psychics, do you use Ouija boards, that kind of stuff. And we don't, and that's not to say that stuff doesn't exist. It's just, you get to a point, I mean, the ghosts are already kind of a paranormal out there thing. If I'm going to use something else that's paranormal and out there to prove something that's paranormal and out there, it doesn't make sense.
Stay with us, Brendan. We're going to come back, take some phone calls with you. We'll play a couple more brand new EVP sounds that you brought. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Every phone in America, iPhones or Androids 4.0 and above there, should have our app. It's free. Download it. Put it on your phone. Keep it. The iPhone app is in the Apple iStore, of course, or you can get it off coasttocoastam.com. Android, you can get that from the Android Google Store, or you can also get that at coasttocoastam.com. Every phone should have the apps. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got a classic program for you tonight, of course. Brendan Cook from the Ghost Investigators Society with us this hour. Next hour, Michael Cremo joins us. Forbidden Archaeology is going to be talking about his new work called My Science, My Religion. Make sure you're part of that. It's not about religion, trust me. It's about strange things that have happened on this planet. Brendan, the technology that's now available, the digital technology, is that making your job easier?
Oh, yes, definitely. And we kind of alluded to it in the last segment. It used to be that you would have to spend, you know, 5-6 hours straight of just listening to audio. Now where it's all digital, and the way I especially do it is I feed everything straight into a laptop immediately. I can visually see, you know, the actual sound waves. So let's say I do leave a recorder or a microphone sitting in a room by itself for a while. I can see when there's an actual break in the sound and, you know, zero in right there without having to go through the entire 7 hours. And on top of that, you've got, I mean, all the various filters that come out with the different software, you know, audio software that are on the market. It clears up the audio so much. I mean, the other day I was going through listening to stuff that we recorded back in 99 and just wishing that we had recorded that with some of the newer stuff that we're using now.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Oh, that could be one of the reasons why some of them seem so clear now as opposed to the old days, too.
Oh, it is. There's no question. I mean, if you listen to what we've done, even, you know, in the last 5 years, I would say, when we started using the big, you know, large diaphragm condenser microphones and things like that and mixers instead of just the little handheld, you know, 8-inch, mini tape recorders. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's night and day as far as clarity.
We've got a couple EVPs to play for the rest of this hour. Let's take some calls, though. We'll go to Crawley, Louisiana. James is with us, east of the Rockies. James, thanks. Go ahead. James? Poor James. I think he was on the delay and he wasn't listening. Try to call back, James. We'll try to get you back on. Kevin in Seattle, Washington. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, believe it or not, the reason I was calling was to actually discuss audio technology.
Great.
Because I heard you talking about sitting there listening, going through all of the audio, and I felt horrible. I'm an audio engineer, a musician, and I was just going to point out that, yeah, you can feed it directly in, visualize it right there, even with something as basic as, like, some of the built-in programs that come with a Mac or a PC just right off the shelf. But that's already been covered, so please continue with the great work. I love what I'm hearing so far, and thank you so much for everything you do, George, here on this coast.
You got it, Kevin. Thank you. Let's listen to our second EVP sound, Brendan. Again, we'll play it, have you explain it, and we'll play it again.
All right.
Can you guys tell me what you like to do where you are?
Okay, that's a tough one to hear, but it sounds like a child. Sounds like I want you, I need you, are you behind me? Go ahead, Brendan.
Right, it does. And, you know, that brings up a really good point with EVP. It is extremely subjective. In other words, and that's why I'm kind of glad tonight we're doing it a little bit differently than we've done in the past, where, you know, we would say, okay, here's the voice, here's what the investigator says, and then here's what the voice says. Because once we do that, we're implanting that voice in your head. You're listening,
that's right.
As a human being, that's what you're trained to do. You're trained to listen to a sound that you're told you're supposed to hear. So by not doing that tonight and just, you know, playing the voice and then I tell you what it says, everybody kind of gets a chance to form their own opinion on it.
That's right.
Now, with this voice, you're right, it is quite low. And even, you know, us in the group, we can't really 100% decide on this is exactly what it says.
Does sound like a child, though.
Well, and there's no question that this was a child. Yeah. And this was actually, this was recorded in a mortuary in northern Massachusetts. And I can only say northern Massachusetts because it's a family-owned mortuary.
I understand.
If anybody found out that we were allowed to do what we did, they would be in trouble. So basically all this clip is me saying, can you guys tell me what it's like, you know, where you are? And that's just a normal question I'd ask. And then this child responds, what we've all kind of come to a consensus of is, I need you, are you behind me?
Let's listen to it one more time. Here we go.
Can you guys tell me what you like to do where you are?
Yeah, I mean, it's you could hear it. She's the little one saying something there, Brendan.
And again, I mean, the biggest part of this is not even so much what, you know, she says. I take it as it's a she, but it's a child's voice. I mean, I don't see any way around saying it's not a child's voice. And this was actually, I looked at the timestamp just a second ago. This was recorded at 3:13 a.m. So, again, we're in a mortuary, for one, and at 3:13 a.m., there's no children. Again, you're left with, is it radio? Is it CB transmissions? You know, baby monitors? What is it?
Let's go to James again. He's back from Crowley, Louisiana, east of the Rockies. Hey, James, hope we got you here.
Yes, sir. Thank you, George.
There you go.
Hey, I had a quick story for you. I bought my first home back in 2003, and my first son was born in 2004. So from day one, he had been in our home. At the age of three, which was around 2007, he had kind of come up to me one evening, being 3 years old, barely able to talk. And he had told me, he said, Dad, could you ask the man not to stay in my room tonight? Now, he wasn't scared. He wasn't, afraid. He just asked if the man could not come in. And I was asking him what he meant. And he said a man would usually be in the corner of his room or walking down the hallway. And, of course, now pushed it off as imagination for a three-year-old until a few weeks later he was telling the exact same story, word for word, to my parents and family at a function we were having. And so we started speaking about this, and I never really talked to my son about it, but I started talking to an investigation group out of Beaumont, Texas, and they told me to take pictures. And I did that, and they told me if I caught anything to give them a call back. And I caught two images. The first image was this orb, extremely bright, not just a dust ball, but extremely bright with a little comet hovering over by the window. And this was probably about 9 o'clock at night. No one else was home. I was there by myself. And the second one was early evening. And I had two windows facing opposite of each other, but the sunlight at dusk was pushing all the shadows back towards me. And I noticed that on the opposite wall, on one of my pictures, I had a before and after because I was taking several pictures in a row, that there was a shadow, light shadow of what looked like a child. So when I presented this evidence to them, they wanted to come do an investigation. we look back in the abstract of the home, and then come to find out in that same room, the lady that had lived there before had passed away of cancer in that room. But what we kept seeing was a little child. They came and did an investigation, and for the men, we went as a group of guys, and they allowed me to go with them. And then I had a girlfriend at the time, and they allowed her to go with the women. As far as the men, we recorded nothing. When the women went in, the lead investigator was asking the questions, and they had a medium or a sensitive lady. She said she was just a sensitive that went through and basically came out of the house saying that she was energy was drawn out of her. And we didn't catch anything on the camera, but on a digital recorder that I brought in with me and my girlfriend at the time had brought in with her during their conversations, there seemed to be a voice of a small child that answered back, "I want to stay here, wow. Home." Now, I'm about like Brandon, and I'm skeptical to an extent, but like I said, I mean, that was just an amazing story, and I've been trying to catch you on that and just kind of get y'all's opinions on what possibly that could lead up to as far as the sighting goes.
Well, how would you handle that, Brendan, if you were there?
Well, here's the thing with that. First of all, we're always leery of people doing investigations at their own home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first question we always ask if somebody wants us to come do their home is, are you comfortable with what we may find? You know, and that's not saying, of course, that we're going to find anything.
Right.
But if we do and we show you, hey, here's the voice we recorded, here's something, you know, we videotaped, what would your reaction to that be? Now, if they say, okay, well, hey, I don't think I could do it, we won't do the investigation. If they say they're comfortable with it, we'll go in, we'll kind of do a couple interviews with them, you know, try and get the details of exactly what they're experiencing, why they think, you know, they even need us there in the first place. It's interesting that he just said, you know, that it was affecting the women, for one, because there's actually a research group in Germany, and I've off the top of my head forgotten their name, that are doing studies on ghosts and effects on hormones. In other words, you know, there's always been kind of this theory that ghosts feed off, you know, human energy, whatever. But now they're kind of pushing it towards it's certain hormones that they feed off of. And that's why, you know, women sometimes will see them more than men. You know, adolescents will see them because they're going through all the physical changes, you know, things like that. So it's interesting that he just brought that up.
All right, let's listen to our third EVP sound that Brendan provided for us. I want you to listen to it, and we'll come back and talk with Brendan about it. Here we go.
Can you describe what it's like where you're at?
It's a little pause. Now here's that little pause, and then pick up again.
I love you, Mark. It feels so good.
One more time.
I love you, Mark.
Again, clearly sounds like a child, Brendan. Where'd you
right.
get this one?
This is actually the same place.
Same place?
And to me, it actually sounds like the same
place. I was going to say, it might be the same little one.
It is, and I'll be honest, this mortuary, I don't get scared of places. I mean, I'm as sensitive psychically as a rock. I mean, I don't feel anything when I go into places. This actually scared me. I mean, I kind of got the feeling when I walked into this mortuary that I wanted to run out like a six-year-old girl.
Oh, my God.
It was that bad.
And that doesn't happen to you a lot.
No, I mean, I've been doing it, again, since 98. And it just, you know, and when we started getting into the stories of what had happened there, and then they were, you know, actually showing us family members and letting us talk to family members that had people buried and cremated in this place and their stories of it, it was a lot to handle.
Well, it sure was. Let's listen to it now one more time now that you've heard it. And we think it says something like, "I saw something." Here we go.
Can you describe what it's like where you're at?
It feels so good. love you once. I feel so good.
Yeah, that something happened at that mortuary a long time ago, Brendan, huh?
I mean, I guess we didn't go over this, but what I think the voice is actually saying, and everybody in the group actually does agree on this one, it sounds like the child saying, I saw something move over there, and then there's this, you know, pause, and then he says, there might be monsters over there. Which, if you put it in context with what I had asked, that's not exactly a pleasant thought.
Not at all. It sounds like the child's in an area that might not be too pleasant for some reason.
Yeah, and you know, the thought of a child having to go through that disturbs me. And we've been over this, you know, for the entire time we've been on the show, that the children's voices are just most disturbing.
Oh, eerie. Very eerie. Jeff, truck driving in Virginia, first-time caller. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Jeffrey.
Hey, Brendan, my wife and I, we've lived in our home about 6 or 7 years. The first 2 years that we lived there, you know, it was just normal, no experiences. And then I had several experiences just involving some shoes, and I told my wife about it, and we kind of laughed. I'm a skeptic for the most part about this. And one day we were in our bedroom, and I had an upright fan that was on, and all of a sudden it shut off, and my wife's like, well, that must be your ghost friend like that. And I said, you see, that's kind of odd. But then things got more intense. I had, my daughter was in my kitchen on a computer one afternoon, and I was in the garage working, and she screamed at the top of her lungs. Now, she's 20-some years old, and I ran in, and I said, what's wrong, honey? She said, Dad, the kitchen sink just turned on all by itself. And I looked over, and the spigot was wide open. And I've had many experiences on that level. I've even had my one grandson one day come out. He's like, well, I guess the power went out in the bedroom. And I said, what do you mean? And he says, well, the TV and all the lights went out. And I said, wow, that's kind of weird. And, you know, you would think with the electrical things it could be a glitch or a surge. But, you know, I've had so many experiences with the shoes that were turned around and things like that. But I guess my question is, if this is so spread out, I can go months at a time and not have an experience, and then other times I can have 3 or 4 in a week or a two-week period. I mean, do you find that common when you do investigation?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is that really is not that uncommon, especially with what are intelligent hauntings. There are times that we've seen and have, you know, been reported to us, and if you Google it, it's a common thing, that ghosts sort of go dormant for a while. And, you know, again, it's theory, who knows why, but I mean, they can be dormant for years. It's just kind of another one of those mysteries of ghost investigating. I guess the one question I would ask is there anything that you're doing, I mean, that you realize is causing this? So is there anything that, you know, some kind of action you might be doing in the home, like remodeling something or something like that, when these things occur?
No, I had not. The one thing that I wondered is, I know I've heard on previous shows about, like, the haunted collector. You might pick something up at a yard sale or antique and bring it into your house.
Right.
I found the previous owners of the home. I know his wife had passed away. Now, I don't know if she passed away in the house or not, but we did find a box with a lot of personal belongings from, like, her yearbook and different things like that. And I couldn't get a hold of the guy to see if he wanted them back, and I ditched him. And I can't really remember if it was around that time or not that these things started happening, but, you know, that could have been it. I'm not sure.
Sometimes that happens when you bring something like that. Brendan, we're out of time here, but would you give us your website?
Yeah, the website is GhostPix, and that's PIX.com.
Very good. Thank you. Brendan Cook, great EVP sounds, great investigator from the Ghost Investigator Society. Up next, of course, Michael Cremo, forbidden archaeologist. He's right around the corner on Coast to Coast AM.